Well, right now we take on a topic of importance, how to guide your children and your family through the digital age, whether it's screen time, monitoring activity, or just when is the right time for your child to have a smartphone. Devorah Heitner has you covered in helping us all raise digital natives. Devorah Heitner is the founder of the organization Raising Digital Natives and the author of the book Screenwise, Helping Kids Thrive and Survive in the Digital World. She is my guest tonight at the big table. Devorah Heitner, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
I really enjoy this book. I mean, I have a nine-year-old and we talk about it all the time. And I in the promo today that was running here on WGN, I talked about the one word that sort of sends shivers up your spine, and that's Minecraft. And it's just like constant. But let's talk about all of it we're going to talk about throughout the whole hour, but digital natives, the concept. What do you mean when you say digital native?
Well, for me, digital natives are the swipe generation. So the kids who are using this super intuitive tech, this is the four-year-old who can make a video but can't read yet and can probably make the video, mm-hmm. send the video, Skype with grandparents in another country. Because technology has become so intuitive, you know, literacy is no longer a requirement, whereas just a few years ago, keyboarding skills presumed at least, you know, that you were maybe 5 or 6 and could read something.
Right.
And so it's just skewed down younger and younger. You know, your kid can grab your phone and take some selfies as a toddler and pretty much know what they're doing.
It's amazing, too. I mean, I think you mentioned or I was reading somewhere about the concept that it used to be text and then graphics or text and then technology, and now it's flipped. For this generation, graphics and technology come first and the text is second.
Exactly.
All right, so let's talk about this. I mean, obviously, you put this together, and it's not necessarily what you would think, a cautionary tale of, oh, my gosh, you better watch out what your kids are looking at. They know more than you. I mean, that seems to be the common misconception or at least the trap that we fall into when we're parents thinking about our children and essentially what they're looking at online.
Yeah, I really wanted to empower parents because I think parents know a lot more than they think they do. Even though we use tech differently than our kids do, we know a lot about life. So conflicts may come up in our kids' Minecraft world or in their texting world. Well, we've survived conflict. We may live with other human beings with whom we have conflict. We may work with other human beings, you know, with whom we've survived conflict. And so we may have some skills, actually, that we can share with our kids on that front because they often have no clue how to deal with conflict in those spaces. Sometimes the grown-ups aren't great role models, of course, for that. Like when we think about conflict in, you know, right. a national conversation right now,
we're not
necessarily modeling all the most wonderful things for kids. But in our families, we have some great ways to show kids, hey, you know, when things get a little funky in a text, we can talk about it in person. That's a great way to interrupt the negative spiral that might be about to start here.
And, you know, relationships, obviously that's a big part of raising digital natives. Just, you know, one thing that always gets, there's a great question that we were just talking about around the campfire that was the concept is your life, what about life in general is worse because of technology, because of the internet? If you think about that and you're like, well, you go through it and it always comes down to relationships. It comes down to communication and relationships. And that seems to be at the core of when raising digital natives is to continue to keep that in the forefront, that relationships and communications are good ways to deal with conflicts and other things that come up with technology.
Absolutely. When we think about what's worse, I mean, kids do have connectivity stress. We all have it. We go into a meeting, we come out, and we're worried about the amount of email we're going to have waiting for us when we've been inaccessible for an hour, let alone a night of sleep or a shower, or we just felt like unplugging over our lunch break. And our kids, the minute they get phones, they have connectivity stress. So one thing we can do is let them know, you know, dude, you're 11. It's okay. You don't have to respond to text all night. You can turn it off and you can tell your friends, hey, I don't text after 9.
Yeah, that's the rules, and we'll get into that just about family time, routines, all the things that go along with technology. We're talking with Devorah Heitner. She's the author of Screenwise, Helping Kids Thrive and Survive in Their Digital World. She's actually going to be out in LaGrange tomorrow night at the Parent Community Network. It's a program at 7 o'clock. You can find out that information at her Twitter. Follow her at Twitter at Devorah Heitner. She's also going to be at Glenburg North High School on September 28th. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue the conversation here on The Download. Stay with us. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio, my guest at the big table tonight, Devorah Heitner, her book, Screenwise, Helping Kids Thrive and Survive in Their Digital World. We're talking about raising digital natives. Before we get back on track, because I definitely want to talk about tech-positive environments, what drew you to this? What got you to to a part where you're, you know, with your own organization, writing books, going to different schools. What is it about this topic that drew you in?
So I used to be a media studies professor, and I was a media historian, and we would look at the ways that moral panics would flow every time a new medium came along. And then I taught kids media culture classes to my college students, and they would get real nostalgic, like, well, we grew up with dial-up, or we grew up with MySpace, but now these kids today with their Instagram, you know, and they would get worried about, because we'd go to schools and interview third graders, and they'd get really worried about the content the third graders were seeing. And these were 19-year-olds. So to me, they were all kids, you know?
Yeah.
And I found that really fascinating.
So the 19-year-olds were getting sort of a little antsy about what third graders were looking
at. Exactly. They thought the third graders were seeing too much, you know, naughty content or violent content, and that they were, you know, too immersed in social media. And I thought, this is really interesting that these micro generations are getting, everybody's so anxious. And then I had a kid myself, and when I became a parent, suddenly the conversation around how much should I share about my child on social media came up. And my friends were all thinking about screen time, and the American Association of Pediatrics had these recommendations, but that nobody really follows. And I thought, there's some really interesting research here. So I started diving into that and left teaching college in 2012 to start Raising Digital
Natives. Well, I find the book is very progressive in the sense that it's not that. It's not, you know, this is what the time should be for your kid to be on the device. Like, it's not that kind of thing. It's much more sort of organic about how technology works when it comes to your family, when it comes to kids. I really resonate, because with a 9-year-old son, I have a hard time sometimes, because I always feel like, you know, I'm letting down society, because he's just so into something that I feel like, you know, if someone was, you know, ripped the roof off of my house, it'd be like, shame. How dare you have him on Minecraft for 2 hours or an hour, whatever it is. I just feel like I always feel out in the dark on that.
We can't draw such a bright line, though, between his Minecraft world and real life, because that is his social life and that is his intellectual life to some degree. It's not the only things, right? He also has face-to-face time with friends and probably does some active things that are different than Minecraft. But his Minecraft world is part of his world. He's learning about how to solve problems. He's learning what to do when he runs into conflicts. He's probably, if he's playing on public servers, learning when a stranger is creepy and best avoided. Mm-hmm. He may be learning some new words from those strangers, but you know, kids are getting exposed to those kinds of things everywhere. So I you can't really feel like, as a parent, you've done a bad job. You just have to talk to them about, hey, you know, if someone's making you uncomfortable or those kinds of things.
Well, I mean, I'm in my early 40s. And I feel, and I've heard this before, that, you know, this generation, the generation that I belong to, is the last generation that didn't grow up with the internet. Or, I mean, we were 20 years old, 21, 22 when it started to pop up, and much older when we got to smartphones.
I remember my first email account and how life-changing I thought that was, you know, just having email and being able to communicate.
So it makes it really hard for us as parents, I think, and even generations before us, to navigate the concept of what is acceptable, what is social, what is good, what is bad, and what might just be too much.
I think we want our kids to show us what they're doing. Like, your kid can show you Minecraft. What are you doing in this world? What are the different modes? What's so cool about it for you? What's so compelling about it for you? We don't have to dive into the point where we get a PhD in Snapchat or Minecraft, but enough to understand what our kids are doing. Just like if your kid took up lacrosse, and if you, like me, had no clue how lacrosse is played, you're like, what are they doing? And they're running around with those sticks with the nets on them. You would want to know, because your kid is so involved in this thing.
Right, of course.
And so I would say the same about the games that they play or the apps they use. You want them to talk to you about it. And with that kind of tour, they can also start to show you their discernment.
Let's talk about tech-positive environments. This is a real big part of this book, about the idea of being a tech-positive parent, not someone who is, you know, shutting it down, or, you know, what you don't know means that you can't have it in the house. Talk about what that means, tech-positive.
Being open-minded, being curious about the experiences your kids have with technology, and embracing what's positive about it and finding ways that it can bring your family together. If your kid is geeking out on YouTube cooking shows, maybe they could be making dinner with you, right? So we want to put some of those tech skills to use. If they can help you organize your apps or teach you how to use your Google Calendar better, this is a good thing. So we want to mentor them. But on the other hand, we want to take what they're learning and use it ourselves.
And how often is that kind of thing? I mean, can you find that? Because I feel like a lot of times, for at least, and what we're talking about right now is just sort of middle school, young middle school kids, you run the risk of that it's really hard to connect with them or relate to what they're looking at because it's usually based on video games or something of that nature.
Sure. And a lot of parents will tell me, I don't dig video games personally. Like, it's not my taste. And I get that. I grew up in an age where not as many girls even played video games. I think now the video games are much more gender neutral and also a lot more interesting. I might have been a gamer had I grown up today, but, you know, Ms. Pac-Man didn't rock my world. So I didn't identify that way. But my kid is getting into games now, and I'm learning about the games that he's playing. And some of them are junk. You know, there's a lot of bad games, but there's also some really good ones. And so looking with him at the ones that are compelling, the ones that are interesting and that are kind of holding him in a narrative way, that's really great. And ones that also bring the family together. My husband and my son like to play a sports game together, and they watch the game and kind of trash talk the other team in the game. And it makes much more sense for us to do that on a school night than watch a real baseball game, because it's a 7-minute game. So that actually does fit in with our evening routine, in the way that actually sitting down to watch a real baseball game on a school night for a second grader might not really work out so well.
Well, you talk a lot in the book about routine. Routine is a big part of trying to get your tech routine down, also sort of working around a family time, being able to incorporate it. But also, and I think that this is a big, big part, is also monitoring the way that you use technology as a parent. If you've got your face in your smartphone or your iPad or even, you know, other devices, they're watching, and they understand that that's how you do it. That's routine, and they're learning from watching you.
I am the biggest offender in my house many times. And so in our family, we're allowed to call each other screen monsters if one of us is getting a little too hooked and not being responsive, or if another family member is talking to the top of our head. And I'm often the one who's getting called out saying, hey, come be with us now. And we also say to each other sometimes, just be here now. It's like, put it away. So I've really learned to close my laptop when my son is talking to me, for example, versus just looking over the top of it. You know, making that eye contact is one thing, but let me also close that content that was pulling me in. And for our kids, it doesn't really matter if we're playing Words with Friends, posting to Instagram, or doing work.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Just looking in your phone, right?
They don't care. They just see us looking at our phones. And I've had a ton of upper elementary, like fifth graders, tell me, you know what, I have to repeat myself 5 times. My parents ask me how my day was, but then they're texting and driving and when they're picking me up. And then I have to tell them again, or they'll say, how was that French test? And then they go back to their phone. And then they're like, so how was that French test? So the kids know they're onto us. And I've actually had kids in my workshops design apps to pull their parents' attention back to the kid. It's like apps that will shut down their phones. So this is something that kids are talking about when I ask them, what's a problem you have with technology? They all talk about how their parents are connected. And I honestly, I think it's the 21st century workplace too, you know, that everyone knows find us.
Right.
And so, and then we feel like that it never ends. Most of us don't have, you know, a sort of a contract where it's like, well, no, you can't email me at a certain hour. Something they're considering in places like Germany where there are labor laws to protect workers. But
yeah, right.
I think here in the US, the culture is kind of like, you have to push back yourself. I think those of us in leadership positions who are also parents should be pushing back, frankly, saying to our team, you know what, I read to my kids at night. You don't email me at 9. Don't expect that I'll be available. Or when I was a professor, I used to say to my students, if you email me at 1 a.m., don't expect a response at 1:15 a.m.
Right,
that's
right.
Not realistic. I'm sleeping. And if
absolutely.
I'm doing something at 1 a.m. that's fun, it's not responding to your email.
Pete's drawn that line with me. I feel like... I'm a guy who's emailing at all hours, and Pete is. We're working on it. We're working on it as a family, Pete and I. All right, so we're talking with Devorah Heitner. She's the author of Screenwise, Helping Kids Thrive and Survive in Their Digital World. She's going to be in LaGrange tomorrow night at the Parent Community Network, 7 o'clock, and also on the 28th, she'll be at Glenbard North High School, talking about the book and talking about raising digital natives. We'll take a break. We'll get to the news. When we come back, lots to talk about. I really want to get at the concept, as the kids get a little bit older, when's the right time for them to get a smartphone? The difference between monitoring and mentoring, and also, you know, when you talk about safety, privacy, and a digital footprint. Those are big issues that are with kids right now. Devorah Heitner's all over it. We'll talk with her some more after the news. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest at the big table tonight, Devorah Heitner. She is the founder of Raising Digital Natives, an organization, and also the author of Screenwise, Helping Kids Thrive and Survive in Their Digital World. We're talking about the very important issue of technology and really sort of the digital world that our children are growing up in, because you and I both are from a generation where the internet just wasn't there yet. It wasn't a thing. And so many parents have to go through, you know, how to deal with their kids being exposed to the digital world, to the internet, to everything that comes with that at a time when we can't hold their hand. And I'll tell you. So let's talk a little bit more about a little bit later in life, middle school. I mean, it used to be high school, but now we're talking about middle school and kids making a decision to get technologically involved by fifth grade.
Right. And fifth grade is like the new ninth grade, except 10-year-olds are a lot younger. I think one of the only good things about such young kids getting phones, because in many ways I do think it's real young to get such a powerful communication device, is that they're so self-righteous and rule-following at that age, and many of them are still quite aligned with adult authority. So the mm-hmm. one good thing about a 10-year-old and a smartphone is, like, the second something goes wrong, they're going to be like, look at this, to you. You know, they're going to come to their parents. Right. And, you know,
communication's a little
rat
bit
out
more
their friend
out there.
Or
yeah,
the,
right.
they're going to call out another kid in a group text and say, you're being mean. Whereas a ninth grader probably will not use that kind of language or be so, you know, kind of righteous in that particular way. So that's one of the good things. I think it is really young, though, because we're holding their hands. I mean, another difference between our childhoods and these kids is we had a lot more independence at a younger age. Many of us were playing outside and negotiating some of our own kind of friendship struggles and experiences. And these kids are living in the age of the playdate. And their social lives are more orchestrated. So it's quite a deep cliff to go from an orchestrated social life where you wake up and mom and dad have arranged your plans for the weekend to here's your smartphone, do it yourself, kid.
Right,
that's a
right.
huge leap.
And also it's a leap for parents. I mean, to say that this is going to be the time. I mean, kids are getting their own smartphones in fifth grade, sixth grade. And they are, you know, for better or for worse, they are now connected in to the real world, the World Wide Web and all that comes with it, both good and bad. And there is something about figuring out your relationship with their exposure to that.
Absolutely. And it's a really good thing to talk to kids about the fact that there's a lot on the internet that isn't great for kids or that you don't even want to see. I mean, there's a lot of violent, scary things on YouTube that I don't want to watch that are happening in the world. So I certainly don't want my child to see those things, but it can happen, right? So we do need to talk to them about it. We can't just wait and think, oh, well, if my child sees something inappropriate, then I'll talk. Because they have already. When I go talk to third graders and I say, how many of you have seen a website that you know wasn't for kids? They all raise their hands. So your kid has seen things that are scary, right, inappropriate, and you don't want to panic and freak out and scare them so much they'll never talk to you about it again. You want to ask them how they feel about what they saw and then make a plan with them. What are you going to do if you stumble on something that freaks you out? Now, if it's a middle schooler or a high schooler, they're not stumbling, they're looking. And so then you need to make sure that that you've given them some appropriate information about life's big questions that aligns with your family's values and is age appropriate for them. Again, you don't want to wait for them to Google
it, you know,
because
but I also
that
think
is not where you want your child figuring out.
What I like about the book is as it moves, you know, it moves us from a monitoring culture. And that's really, if you wrote this book 10 years ago, it was like, well, there's this app and this app and this site and this program, this software that'll block anything that's on your computer.
People are still all about that, though. There are a lot of people who want to put a chip on their kid's phone and follow everything that they're doing. And then they're going to be so bored. If you start reading your kid's texts, it is a very boring. You know,
but I would even
nothing.
Say, you mentioned it in the book, and I thought this was really interesting, that, you know what, they will find, it's almost like a fence.
Right.
And when you put up a fence, any being of any kind is going to figure out how to get over that fence, get around that fence, go under that fence. And the concept of creating that relationship with your child that early, where you're like putting up a fence and then they just curiously want to get around that fence, that's not necessarily the best way to approach the internet and the digital world that we're living in now.
Absolutely. I think, you know, in a way, I mean, you should be excited if you have a little hacker, because that kid's going to found a tech company and support you one day. So be thrilled if you have a little hacker, but just make sure that their ethics are good and they're going to use their hacking skills and their superpowers for something positive in the world.
Right. Well, I mean, there's a whole chapter that's really about the idea of monitoring versus mentoring. And that's what this is. This it almost feels like a philosophical change, and I think a good one, in the way that we're mentoring a digital society, kids that have to enter in. You have to give rules, but you don't have to necessarily be the parent who monitors or sort of censors what they have access
Certainly.
To.
And if you do monitor, you want to let them know you're doing it. I mean, covertly monitoring doesn't really get you anywhere as a parent, because how badly does your child have to mess up before you admit that you're covertly monitoring? I mean, do they have to be planning a major heist or something really awful before you say, actually, I can see everything on your phone? Better if you're going to monitor that you let them know and you tell them what you're actually looking for. I'm concerned because sometimes kids are unkind here, so I'm monitoring for that. And my plan to step back from that monitoring is I see you do these appropriate things for this many months or years. And that, you know, because you're not going to monitor when they go to college. And right. This is the thing I've had parents tell me, oh, I'm still geo-tracking my kid on her phone to make sure she goes to class as a college student. Well, that's pretty concerning to me. Like, if you don't trust your 18-year-old that you've sent off to college to go to class and you're geo-tracking them, it seems like, you know, a bit strong, right?
Right.
A little bit CIA-ish. So thinking that you want to kind of step back and say, okay, if I have a sixth grader and I'm reading their text because they just got a phone, I want to let her know what I'm looking for. And then I want to have a plan for backing off from that and making sure that I'm still here for her, even though I'm not going to read anymore maybe next year. She can still come to me if she's being harassed, if she's in a jam, if something's going, you know, haywire in her life. I'm still here, but I don't need to be reading every text.
Yeah, and I'm interested in the concept. I mean, obviously, safety and privacy, and there really is a difference. And I think that, you know, I thought when I first was sort of reading it, I'm like, well, what about safety? What about privacy? But it's really, they're almost in a weird way, it's sort of versus in the way that safety and making, you know, sure that your children are protected from predators or from bad stuff that's on the internet versus privacy, which is, you know, a different game, I guess. So talk about the concepts that are out there, you know, that we have to navigate when it comes to the things that the internet, you know, exposes us.
These kids are so different than we are. I mean, as a Gen Xer, I so value my privacy. And this generation, when I talk to high school and middle school kids, these post 9/11 babies, they are like, I just want to be safe. I'm not doing anything wrong, so it's okay if the government sees all my posts and knows all the library books I check out because I'm not doing anything wrong. I'd rather be safe than private. So they have a completely different, I feel like, well, I'm not doing anything wrong either, but why should anyone know what library books I check out or what I buy on Amazon? And so what we want to do is start to encourage our kids to be kind of skeptical, to think about why do you see that ad for the thing you were just searching for? And, you know, why do you get different search results on Google than I get when I search for something? And what does that tell you about the way, you know, the internet is tracking you, right? And I don't want to make our kids paranoid, but I think they should be skeptical. They should be very skeptical. I'm teaching my 7-year-old to be skeptical about in-app purchases. It's they just want your money.
Right.
Don't give them your money.
It's a simple
or my money, as the case may be.
But that's so interesting because it isn't. You and I probably share the same sort of values. The idea, the concept I am very skeptical. I'm always thinking about, you know, the privacy issues in my life. But a new generation, because it's just so inundated, they're not thinking that way. They think in a whole different way. Everything's out in the open and I'm okay because I'm not doing anything wrong.
They're growing up more public and we need to help them learn that it's okay to have boundaries. Kids now think it's rude to refuse a follower on a social media app. They also don't know that it's okay to say no to having their picture taken. This is one of the things that I talk about in the book is ask your kid before you take and share their picture on social media and get consent. And a lot of that is because we want them to go out there and be able to say no. If someone takes their picture without permission, they should be like, hey, dude, don't share that. I didn't say that was okay. And they have no idea that it's okay to express a boundary that way.
And that's important, especially when we get into some of the, like we said, the nefarious parts of the internet. When you talk about sexting and you know, kids sharing their bodies with each other. And then what happens at school where, you know, that gets shared and shared and shared. That's a real thing that happens a lot in middle schools and high schools. But it really is about trying to, you know, let them know that permission is an important thing. You have to have consent. You have to have permission. And I think I really took that away from the book when I said, how often have I asked my son, hey, is it okay if I post this picture of you on Instagram? You know, is it okay if I post this? How much time my wife has said that, you know, here's something funny that he did. I don't think I've ever said, is it okay if I put this up? I think that's so interesting.
It's a great thing to start doing, especially as they get closer to the age of using social media themselves, because then they could say, like, my kid might say, well, it's okay to just share in the family. So I might be able to text it just to my husband or something because it might be a funny picture or a silly picture and he might not feel like it's for, you know, worldwide consumption. And even though he doesn't really know the size of my social network, he has some sense that that's more public than just family only. So giving kids the idea that they're different publics, that you could share something in the family, you could keep that picture just to show to their future spouse, you know, or you could keep, you know, share it with quite a lot of people in public, that's a good thing for them to think about. So when they start thinking about the size of their own social mm-hmm. network, they can start to understand, oh yeah, I shared that with a lot more people than I was thinking about. I was just thinking about my three friends, but now these other friends are feeling left out because I shared that picture of us I didn't really think about. And that's a skill that honestly, it's quite hard even for adults who are using social media to grasp. I mean, it's something I have definitely made errors. Right. And then we also need to teach our kids that those errors are not catastrophic. You know, like, okay, your friends feel bad. You can work this out. You're not a terrible person.
Goes back to that idea of building relationships and communication outside of the digital world so you can answer and sort of deal with the conflict. Devorah, one of the last things we'll talk about is the digital footprint. This is something we all deal with as adults, where you create a sort of persona online of who you are and share things with people, and the stuff kind of trails and it creates almost an archive of the person. For kids, this is a real thing, especially if they're starting with smartphones and social media at such a young age. We didn't have to deal with that. We can make choices as adults. They're not. I mean, talk about the concept of building and creating and I guess communicating to them the concept of a digital footprint.
Well, I think we try to scare kids a lot with showing them examples of people who've really messed up their digital footprint. And I would say we want to do more positive example sharing. So thinking about the Olympics, obviously there's some very negative digital footprint stories and reputation stories, but think about some of the athletes that came out where you have so much admiration for them, regardless of their medal position, you know, where they're bringing new attention to a huge social problem in their home country, or they're reframing a conversation about adoption and being a role model for adopted kids mm-hmm. everywhere. I mean, these are kind of amazing opportunities. And we want to show our kids, like, this is what you can do with a positive reputation. These are the ways you want to be, you know, admired. And then you also want to give them examples that are very real to them. You know, we can't focus with an 11-year-old on college and career. Even if we're very focused on that and our families maybe too much, we should be instead saying, think about your friends' parents. They might be following their kids on Instagram. Will they want you at their table if they see a gross post or bad language? So make it really immediate for them, not something that's, you know, way in the future. Right. That's way too abstract to say, again, oh, well, you won't get into the University of Illinois, or you can't go to Princeton
like
if 10 you
years ago. That feels
post
like,
that.
Yeah.
It's just not
the
real
to them.
The
old story we'd read all the time about, oh, if you're drinking on Facebook, you got a photo of you drinking. What if a job interview? You saw that, you're like, all right, you know, that
exactly.
to me seems the old way. As we just sort of transition to a new way, giving different examples of how a digital footprint can work for you and not work for you is a good thing.
Yeah, and show them examples of people that are doing a good job. And I certainly would also give some negative examples to high school kids and say, look, if I'm choosing between three babysitters, the one with the drug reference on the Facebook page isn't going to get the job. And it's not that I'm drug testing the babysitter, but I'm looking at who had the bad judgment to make that their picture, or who, you know, share that in such a public way with no privacy settings. That person maybe isn't ready to come to work for our family.
There you go. The I guess the takeaway tonight is make everything private.
I think put things in public that you can be proud of, and also recognize that it's a performance too, that our kids sometimes feel real sad when they look at other people just having an awesome time. But recognize everybody's performing a little
a
in those social media
yeah.
spaces. So, and we kind of want to teach our kids actually to do that, to not, you know, be too open and plain about super negative things or super private things. But then they have to remember everyone else is doing the same thing.
There's so much in this book. We haven't even got to social media, of course, as we're sort of hitting the end here. But also just high school students have a whole other area of problems when it comes to social media and their digital footprint and being in a digital world. We'll have to get to that at a different time. Devorah Heitner is the author of Screenwise, Helping Kids Thrive and Survive in Their Digital World. She's also the founder of the organization Raising Digital Natives. She is going to be in LaGrange tomorrow night at Parent Community Network. That's at 7 o'clock, and she'll be on September 28th at Glenbard North High School. You can find out all the information at Twitter, at Devorah Heitner. Devorah, great having you, and thanks for coming in. We appreciate
it. Thanks so much. Enjoy some Minecraft with your kiddo.